Welcome to Wheels Across the West, History and Legacy of the Santa Fe Trail, production by students at the Kinder Institutes on Constitutional Democracy at the University of Missouri, presented by the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm Isaac Yonis, your host for this episode, Structures of Violence in the American West. Does violence within a community lead to social instability, or does social instability lead to violence? Philosophers, activists, and politicians contend with this question daily, and rightly so. Violence and social instability pervade our communities every day. Those who attempt to answer this question are difficultly tasked with pinpointing which event causes the other. Does an act of violence cause a community to fall into chaos? Or does a chaotic event in a community incite individuals to do violence onto others? I've pondered this question for the last few months as I researched structures of violence in towns on the Santa Fe Trail and throughout the American West during the 19th century. Violence and social instability perpetually build upon one another. However, certain social events led to significant increases in violent events. This proves particularly true in the cattle town filled to the brim with social outsiders of Dodge City, Kansas. Dodge City is an important city to explore because it was frequented by the type of people who typically operate outside of the law. Gunslingers, prostitutes, gamblers, criminals, you name it. Dodge City is also situated on the center of the Santa Fe Trail, making it a perfect place for this podcast to dive into. The introduction of outsiders in Western communities increased the number of violent events. Although outsiders can mean anybody alien to Dodge City, the term mainly refers to itinerant labor. This argument is understood by exploring how much of the population of the community increased, and second, by exploring how violence was impacted based on those population increases. We'll start with the population increases in Ford County, Kansas, where Dodge City is located, and use statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau. In 1870, 427 people lived in Ford County. In 1890, 5,308 people lived in Ford County. That's roughly an 1,100% increase in the county's population. Several reasons explain why Ford County saw such a drastic increase in its population. The end of the American Civil War in 1865 left many who served in the armies to seek new job opportunities. Of those jobs that veterans qualified for, cattle driving was an ideal trade. Cattle driving involved physically moving thousands of cows up through Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas to slaughterhouses in Kansas City, Missouri. It required a level of grit and fortitude that couldn't be learned on the job. It required a cattle driver, or a cowboy, to protect the cattle from wild coyotes, raiding native tribes, and other threats that they would find along their journey from Texas to KC. According to historian Stephen Aaron's accounts in his book Peace and Friendship, the typical cattle drive consisted of 8 men and 1,000 cattle. Of course, the cattle and the cowboys would have to periodically stop to rest and restock on supplies, and one of the most infamous stops was Dodge City. Dodge City in the late 19th century wasn't a place for kids. It frankly wasn't a place for anybody who wasn't looking to risk their life. Nights out at the saloon could end in a shootout, or if you had some money in your pocket, you could end up going home with a prostitute who made up one half of Dodge City's adult female population. But of course, even if you made it back to your motel room with a prostitute, you weren't safe because violence could even occur there. Extra, extra, read all about it. Read the newest issue of the Dodge City Times, fresh off the press. Murder in Dodge City. On Tuesday night, a murder was committed in the city in that part of town south of the railroad track. Henry Heck and John Gill, alias Concho, bestowed their affections upon the same soiled dove, Concho holding the fort, as it were. Heck applied for admission to the room in which Concho and the prostitute were occupying, and while standing at the door of the room received a pistol shot, the ball striking him on the right side below the nipple and entering the lung. Heck walked down to the saloon nearby, calling for a drink, remarked to the bartender that he had been shot. He walked out of the bar room, returning a few minutes later, and it fell down, expired, without a groan. He died about half an hour after the shooting. This was a real story published in the November 1880 issue of the Dodge City Times. Heck was only 30 years old, and yes, he was a cowboy, just like so many others who succumbed to the same fate. Heck owned a ranch just south of Dodge City. This brings us back to the questions that I asked at the beginning of this episode about the relationship between social instability and violence. Did the influx of cattle drivers cause the citizens of Dodge City to become more violent? Or did the collision of cowboys and locals culminate in a recipe for homicide? Another fascinating example of violence between outsiders is found in a publication of the Iola Register. Iola is a city in Kansas near Dodge. The Iola Register reported in 1877 that evidence was found in relation to a murder that occurred in Dodge City in 1857. Quote, "A party of Mexicans were murdered by the Indians and only one escaped. The survivor buried 21 bags, each worth $1,000 in silver, and went away. His son, many years after, went for the money but did not find it. He revealed the secret to someone who is now a resident of Dodge, and an effort is being made to find the money." These two examples of how the sudden appearance of diverse groups and new arrivals caused an increase in violence raises the question, what were the consequences of this population increase? A consequence of the population boom seen in the American West was the proliferation of more guns. The more cowboys in town meant more guns and more hands. But how? And why? The increase in firepower in the West is understood by contextualizing the 19th century in relation to the story of colonization in the New World. We should zoom out and go far back in time, a time before cowboys and tumbleweeds, a time before the United States even had an identity. We must go back to the age of colonial conquest. Brian DeLay's scholarship in the Arms Trade and American Revolutions provides key insight to this question. We may see guns in the American West because the demands of maintaining and expanding colonial rule. DeLay sums up nicely, quote, "Colonialism requires a managed inequality of firepower. As the colonial powers of the transatlantic slave trade, such as the French, the Spanish, and the British, pursued their policy goals of creating an international trading empire, with them came a myriad of firearms manufactured in Europe, and a lot of them at that. Nearly all of the world's guns came from European cities, which served as industrial powerhouses of the 1700s. Of these cities, Saint-Étienne in France produced more than 250,000 firearms in 1772 alone. Although the French didn't have a considerable amount of influence over continental North America, the same expectation should be applied to the Spanish, who did. All this, however, was centuries before American cowboys came into the picture. As the Age of Revolution dawned in the Western Hemisphere, budding nations like Mexico and America took up arms and kicked out their colonial bosses of the Americas. The age of revolutions and the century of violence that followed stimulated a homegrown arms manufacturing industry in the United States that transformed America into a trading and production hub for war material. Some of this material fell into the hands of merchants who sold it to armies and militias, while some of it trickled down to bandits and cowboys, giving rise to the gunslinger image that we have of the Wild West. So let's zoom back into the quaint little towns of the American West and answer this question. How did these cowboys use firearms? The simple answer is, of course, that they pulled the trigger. But I want to dive deeper than that. I want to dive into why they shot, when they shot, and who they shot. And by the end of this, we may be asking ourselves, did they even shoot? To answer why cowboys shot their guns, we can look towards two factors. The absence of rule of law and the use of firearms as a mechanism to resolve disputes. In many areas of the 19th century American West, federal control was illusory at best, and the lack of military or police authority left space for a crude form of frontier justice. The Civil War caused the government to recall military men who may have been stationed out west to fight for the Union on the battlefields of the Civil War. This left the role of policing to territorial militias, who weren't formally trained to enforce the statutory laws of the territories or the federal government, but instead enforced laws as they deemed fit. Another reason why there was an absence of rule of law can be attributed to the fact that this territory was simply too new for a standard of rule of law to be enforced. Many of these cities out west, like Dodge City, were established for a specific purpose. Dodge, for example, started as a military fort, Fort Dodge, and later transitioned into a cow town. And since the federal government was dealing with a handful of domestic issues out east and international issues abroad, they had little time to quell the murders and other crimes that occurred in the West. This context keys us into why cowboys discharged their guns as a mechanism to resolve disputes. To quote Bob Dylan, "When you got nothing to lose." I think this quote perfectly describes why Dodge City dwellers resorted to gunfire when they were in a pinch. Hard working, hard drinking, and a hyper-masculine culture meant that men in frontier towns often found themselves in dangerous situations. Whether they lost their hand playing Texas Hold'em or found themselves on the losing side of an argument, many of these migrant workers really didn't have anything to lose, nor did they have the rule of law to hold them accountable. So when a cowboy, inflamed with emotions, found himself on the short end of a dispute with another cowboy, he might have just shot them. A shot, regardless of if it was lethal, would end the argument with a bang. But if you peer into the historical record, the story didn't go that way as often as you would think. Stephen Aaron suggests that cowboys actually refrained from discharging their guns because the bullets themselves were too expensive. Instead, they preferred a quicker, quieter, and blunter technique to resolving their disputes, the technique of buffaloing. Buffaloing, or pistol whipping, was a quick and easy alternative to the firing of a bullet. It would suppress their adversary in the same way that a gunshot would, without the gruesome, noisy complications involved with shooting their pistol. Many cowboys shot their guns in heat-of-the-moment disputes, such as when they lost their hand in poker or when they got into an argument with an adversary. But another important factor to consider is that cowboys often shot when they were drunk. A look into the coroner's inquest of the counties of Douglas and Las Animas in Colorado and Gila County in Arizona provides some key insight into this question. In Las Animas County, 60.2% of perpetrators who committed homicides had a significant level of alcohol in their system. In Gila County, 71.4% of perpetrators had a significant level of alcohol in their system. And in Douglas, 75.4% of perpetrators had a significant level of alcohol in their system. What's even more fascinating, yet unsurprising, is that their victims were often drunk too. The victims of homicides in Las Animas were drunk 56.3% of the time, in Gila, 63.9% of the time, and in Douglas, 65.2% of the time. This all goes to show that violence in the American West was often conducted in the heat of the moment. And with this in mind, we should move towards exploring the final piece of the puzzle, how it all ended. Before 1872, there was no municipal government to enforce police power in Dodge City, which drastically affected the homicide rate. Between 1866 and 1876, over 50 homicides occurred in Dodge, a number which is unsurprising on its face, but quite surprising when you consider that Dodge only ever had a few thousand people living in it during the 19th century. The homicide rate proved a problem to the city's administrators, who finally began enforcing the rule of law in 1875. Interestingly, there were two restrictions on bearing arms within city limits. Section 7 of Ordinance 4 of the Dodge City Criminal Code states, quote, "No person in the city of Dodge shall carry concealed any pistol, bowie knife, slingshot, or other dangerous or deadly weapon except United States state, county, township, or city officers." And in 1876, the municipal government outlawed weapons entirely. After the municipal government was established and Dodge was legally incorporated into the state of Kansas, city administrators put in place several police policies that promoted the apprehension of criminals. One of those was a commission-based reward system that encouraged police officers to make arrests. Officers would make $2.50 per arrest that they would make, and in a good month, the police department would make over 300 arrests. By the late 1870s, police wages accounted for over 40% of the city's annual budget. As police power rose and the age of cattle towns and cowboys declined, cities like Dodge fell into obscurity as America pushed forward into the 20th century. Eventually, there was no need to enforce stringent policies, as there was no need for cowboys to travel through cattle towns anymore. But by taking a dive into how and why violence unfolded on the frontiers of the American West, we gain a deeper understanding for many of the stories about the Wild West we hear today. If the likes of John Wayne and Clint Eastwood didn't give a heroic sheen to frontier violence, then maybe we would consider the personal violence which unfolded in the American West to be just a small part of the darker history of industrial and racial violence that claimed far more casualties in the region. If Hollywood wanted to show what structures of violence were actually like, we wouldn't see huge shootouts and glamorous gunslingers. Instead, we might see drunk cowboys receiving citations for buffaloing each other in full color on the big screen. This episode of Wheels Across the West was written and narrated by me, Isaac Youngs. Our producer and engineer is Kyle Jackson, and our executive producer is Jay Sexton, director of the Kinder Institute at the University of Missouri. This podcast is recorded at KBIA Studios in Columbia, Missouri, and distributed in partnership with the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm fine and dandy.